was a wonderful son, husband, father, father-in-law, and Zaidi. A gentle spirit, who never complained, avid, loving, passionate interest in his children and grandchildren, selfless with his family and community, a loving, supportive father and son relationship, not an in-law relationship, a quiet, dignified, religious man. Though these words were written and shared in a family Torah email marking the yahrzeit of Zaidi Eugene Sabo, Olav Shalom, they really could have been autobiographical. It's a great kavod to be here. Birshus Rav, or the Asra, by Donath, Rav and Rebbetzin Yudin, by Markowitz, Rebbetzin, by Gershon, Reb Gershon, my friend. Most significantly, among family, Mrs. Thaler, children, aunts, uncles, in-laws, machatonim, cousins, nephews, nieces. Is there anything that more expresses who David was, who Dr. Thaler is, to all of us, and to this community, than getting together like this? This person who brought others together. And it's a big honor for all of us, a zchus for all of us, to learn tonight in honor of Dr. Thaler, but also to learn with Dr. Thaler. Still waters run deep, they say. The numerous opportunities I had to interact with David Olav Shalom, it was clear that this was a man of great humility. Like Rabbi Donath so accurately described, a person of deep Eitza, a reflective person, someone who was just interested in others. It's such a chiddush. It's so novel in today's day and age to have someone who's so engaged, who's so there. There's a feeling like time really slowed down when you're with him. He's really interested in listening. As a therapist, as a friend, a person who's fascinated with others, a person who is just interested in what was going on, what was taking place beneath the surface. He sought the essence of people, he sought the essence of ideas. I'm grateful to the extended family for the opportunity to be here tonight. I'm also thankful for you adding me to that email chain. Printed those emails out and shared them with my own family. In these incredible epistles, in these kisvei Dr. Thaler, in these missives, they're like these like mission statements and like family updates. It's like they send out like a family newsletter. This cousin and that cousin, I couldn't keep track of everybody. If I had like a big whiteboard, I could put down everybody, but it's a big family. He was really like, touching all the bases. Such a dedication to family. A love of Yiddishkeit, a love of learning, a thirst for spirituality, and above all, a love of family. In one of those emails, it's on the sheet in front of you, in Parshas Vayakel Pkudei, in 2017, Dr. Thaler wrote, the Or HaChaim HaKadosh concludes, this is in the context of the building of the Mishkan, the design of the Mishkan, that every item of the Mikdash is highlighted in the Torah by the phrase, Kasher Tziva Hashem Es Moshe, the way, according to the way that God commanded Moshe. Moshe followed instructions. I don't know how to take Moshe. Listen, it's Dr. We're here with Dr. You're allowed to be a little vulnerable. Like, it doesn't have to be exactly perfect. You would be okay with that. In fact, you'd probably like it more. Not so scripted. Not so schmaltzy. Says the Rechaim HaKadosh, this is in accordance with the wonders of the hidden wisdom that Moshe Rabbeinu intended for each item that went into the construction of the Mishkan. And if anyone had ever been in their living room, the next statement of the Or HaChaim HaKadosh resonates. Learning Torah can be on the Pshat, Remez, Drash, and Sod levels, as exhibited and as testified by the Svarim on the shelves in the Thaler home. Torah could be learned on a literal, symbolic, midrashic, and hidden level. It's called Pardes. Literally means an orchard. Pshat, Remez, Drash, and Sod. Different levels of interpretation, metaphor, of symbolism, and of its basic intent, and that which lies beneath the surface. David concluded his remark in that email, I'm consistently drawn to the wonders of the Sod. Someone who's looking for what was taking place beneath the surface. There's a wonderful collection of stories and teachings and anecdotes that was collected by the previous Lubavitcher Rebbe, the Rebbe Arayatz, Rabbi Yosef Yitzchak Schneerson of blessed memory. It's called the Likutei Diburim. It's a number of volumes, and it has great stuff. Really off the radar kind of historical anecdotes and teachings. Here in the first source on the page, or in the second source, right in the first Hebrew paragraph, Likutei Diburim Chelek Dalet, a story that takes place in 1759 between the Baal Shem Tov HaKadosh, the great spiritual master and revolutionary who changed the world, and Reb Chaim Rappaport, who was someone originally, as the Rav of Lvov, was somewhat skeptical of the Baal Shem Tov, but then ultimately came around to be impressed by the Baal Shem Tov's scholarship and sincerity and holiness, and he became a student of the Baal Shem Tov from afar. Baal Shem Tov sent a letter to Reb Chaim Rappaport with specific instructions. He writes as follows. This is the way it's described. He sent him one of his young students who bikshul alechet b'shlichus miyucheret. He sent someone for a specific, like a very special shlichus, to Reb Chaim Rappaport. And he said, ba'od zman katzar, short time from now, on one Wednesday, echad mimei revi b'chodesh Tammuz, one Wednesday in Chodesh Tammuz, we're holding now an Erev Rosh Chodesh Tammuz, to leave his house, Elayar Hasamuch, to the nearby forest, and there Sham Yilmad Bi'ion Hilchas Brachos from the Rambam. He sent Reb Chaim Rappaport out to the forest to take a specific volume of the laws of Brachot from the Rambam. He said to go to that place and learn Rambam there. Okay? And once you're there, Yichtov La'atzmo Kama Mechidusha Torah Shalom Amochem, to write down some of the ideas, some of the Chidushi Torah that come down to you in that place, in that forest. Okay. The Wednesday arrives. Soer miuchad, b'miuchad, in the second paragraph. It was wild. It was a flash flood. Thunder and lightning. A total downpour of rain. G'shomim azim. Reb Chaim ichlit, t'alei mikach. He said, whatever, it doesn't matter. I'm going for it. The Baal Shem Tov told me to go, I'm going. And he sets out on his journey, and one thing after another, the wagon wheel gets stuck in the mud and the axle breaks. The harness that was holding the horse falls apart and the horse goes off the road. And one mishap after another, the journey is just being delayed and delayed and delayed. Till it becomes clear, like there's a Chassidish story that's unfolding over here. Like it always has to happen like this. They're on the way, maybe there's an inn, maybe there's a tailor, maybe there's a shoemaker, or the wagon gets stuck in the mud. And that's what happened. The wagon's stuck in the mud. But he's not giving up. There's no way. I'm going. He's going. He has his chever with him. And they say, Rebbe, listen, this is a little crazy. We're in the forest. It's totally like we're lost. The mud. The Chaim Rappaport says, we're going for it. Baal Shem Tov says to go, we're going. They finally arrived to that place in the forest. And they'd been traveling for a long time. They were a little bit wiped out. Reb Chaim Rappaport sat down in a place that he could find on a little stump, took out his Rambam, Hilchas Brachos, and started learning. And the guys that were with him, were thirsty. They went searching for a little something to drink. And while he was writing his chidushim, his insights on the Rambam, the Chevra found a little bit of like a bubbling spring. There they quenched their thirst. Reb Chaim washed his hand and davened mincha. And the trip came to an end. That was it. I don't know if they took a selfie or whatever, and then they said, okay, you know, we're here. There's no souvenir stand over there in the middle of the forest. You know, we slept all the way to this ridiculous forest, and all we got was this t-shirt. There's nothing like that. It was completely empty and desolate. But they did their shlichus, and they packed up shop and came back. When it came to Elul time, Chaim Rappaport went to spend Yom Neroyim with the Tzaddik. He came to Mezhbiz, in Ukraine, to be with the Baal Shem Tov HaKadosh. He arrived there, and the Baal Shem Tov wanted a full download. He wanted a full report, every detail. Tell me exactly where you were, what happened there, what did you do? Exactly in that place. He told him, he gave the report. But you could imagine, like, even though he was completely dedicated to his Rebbe, even though he was all in on the mission, you have to imagine that he was wondering, what on earth is this all about? Like, what's the purpose of this? The schlep, the effort, like, what was the ubechei? Like, what's the takeaway? What's the bottom line over here? The bottom of that first column. So the Shabbos, during the Shabbos meal, Sipera Baal Shem Tov Sipur, he told a story that penetrated the depths of their soul about a Yid, about a Neshama Yehudit, a Jew, Milfnei Mea Shana V'Yoterhud, 100 years and even more before that, Asher Chaya Ba'oto Makom Bayar. He explained, he tells a story that in that specific forest, there was a Jew over 100 years ago who lived. And that Jew is Chata'ava Meshech Chaya B'Chata'im Rabim. And that Jewess who had lived there was someone who went off and rebelled in a very intense way and committed averos that shouldn't be written down. And that Jew, that soul, was kukal atikun, needed desperately to find a fixing. Desperately needed some repair in the supernal worlds. And being there in that place, Reb Chaim Rappaport understood the Baal Shem Tov had sent him there to learn that specific perek on Hilchas Brachos, in that specific place, to bring rest and consolation, fixing and healing in the upper worlds to that soul. But there was something else that took place on that trip also. Shlichus nosefet itkaima benisiyazo. There was another element. There was a sub-narrative to that mission, to that mystical journey. Says the Baal Shem Tov, Kasher bara Elokim es ha'olam, when God created the world. Since the 6 days of creation, the lower waters that were separated from the upper waters are yearning to be reunified. The lower waters in that place, for thousands of years, were waiting to find their purpose. We're waiting for their potential to be actualized. Why were we sent down to this forest? Mela, we were in Eretz Israel. Mela, you put us somewhere where somebody would immerse themselves in a mikveh, or someone would draw this water and use it to bake matzos for Pesach, something. Or that a Jew somewhere, sometime would stop by and make shahakol ne'abed varo and take a little drink of water. But these waters, so to speak, this inanimate object, buried under leaves and rubble, who knows what, in the forest, somewhere out in the Lithuanian countryside, are waiting since the 6 days of creation to fulfill its potential and purpose. And until Reb Chaim Rappaport and his group of students came to that place at that time and washed their hands for mincha and took a little drink to quench their thirst, those waters hadn't been actualized. The thirst of those waters hadn't been quenched. And they had a taina, a complaint against the Ribono Shel Olam, against the master of the world. And when a Jew came there and used that water for some purpose, those waters also found their tikkun. Says the Friedrich Rebbe in the last lines of that paragraph on the left, Zeu inyan hashgacha pratis. as the Baal Shem Tov explained, is the essence of Hashgacha Pratit, of divine intervention and divine providence. L'chol nivra nikva moed hamaduyak shebo yis'al al makoro. For everything that's created in the world has its place and has its time. And every single thing in creation, inanimate, that which is alive, every animal, every stone and every grain of sand, every bubbling spring, and every single one of us, every soul, has its purpose. And we are all on a journey toward finding our place and fulfilling our potential. Now, most of us don't get a directive from the Baal Shem Tov. We don't get a WhatsApp with like very specific directions from the Baal Shem Tov HaKadosh where to go exactly. Sometimes people pay a few bucks to go to speak to a person visiting to get a bracha and hope to be able to get those specific directions. Probably consult your local Orthodox rabbi in Fairlawn who might be able to talk a little sense and he would say, okay, cool your engines. And we were all trying to make sense of this world. We're all trying to make sense of this life and chart a direction and a course for our families and figure out what to do, where to go, how to be, so that we maximize our time on this earth and be the best we can be. We're all waiting from some little kvittel, some note to fall out of the kotel from God himself to tell us where to go and what to do. But that directive from the Baal Shem Tov usually doesn't come to sane people, at least. And we don't have the full picture. But that world of Sod that Dr. Thaler was so drawn toward, talking to Rebecca about, you know, what would be meaningful to learn, I thought that we could just continue and pick up where Dr. Thaler was learning from some of those Sfarim that were on the shelf. The world of Sod, the world of that which lies beneath, the world of secrets, which is where he spent his days and nights helping people excavate and open up and make sense of and chart a course in the world, that Eitza Amuka that he was such an expert at. In the Sfarim of the Baal Shem Tov HaKadosh and of his students, and even going back earlier, in the writings of the Vilna Gaon, in the writings of Reb Chaim Vital and the Ari HaKadosh, and in the Zohar HaKadosh, which really help us understand the world of Sod, of that which lies beneath, there's a language of tikkun that's often engaged. Tikkun meaning to fix, complete. Dr. Thaler was a matakin. He was a person who was a fixer. He was helping others fix and fix themselves. We're put in this world to do our best. L'takein olam b'malchut shaddai, to complete the picture in Hashem's kingdom, to do our part to make the world a better place by improving ourselves, by finding some way to rectify and complete our job by doing our best. Now, in another email, around this time of year, these parshios, Korach, Shlach, Shlach and Korach, Dr. Thaler dips his toes into the waters of Sod in discussing reincarnation, Gilgulim. Now, I'm not a Gilgul guy. And the Ramban, Nachmanides, he writes about Gilgulim in his Perush al Torah, which when it's translated in a couple of English translations of the Ramban, they kind of like leave those parts out. Even the translators of the Ramban said, listen, it's not, you know, we don't know. And we don't know. And we don't know. But the notion or the topic or the category of Gilgul Neshamas, without going into it and really understanding it, without being presumptuous to like, know that we have a peek behind the curtain of how the great infinite wizard, the Ribono Shel Olam, is kind of like helping things unfold throughout history. The Ramban wrote about it. The Vilna Gaon writes about it. The Baal Shem Tov HaKadosh writes about it. It's part of Jewish consciousness. It's part of our world. And that's what Dr. Thaler was drawn toward. Because just knowing that we don't know, and knowing that there is a sub-narrative, or a meta-narrative, that there's reality unfolding on different playing fields, that whatever we see in front of us that we can measure and taste and touch and feel and explain and understand is not the entirety of the story, helps us begin to make sense and comprehend the incomprehensible. Just to at least know that we don't know the full picture, that we don't have the whole story. If you take a look on the sheet here, there's a pasuk, beginning of Sefer Bamidbar. The Kadosh Baruch Hu instructs Klal Yisrael, Moshe Rabbeinu, to take a census, to count Jews so that Jews know that we count. Su'u es rosh kol adas b'nei Yisrael. Literally, uplift every Jew by counting them, by letting them know that they matter, that they're important, and that each individual is part of a greater sum. The entirety of the congregation of Israel, l'mishpachosam, l'beis avosam, by their families following their father's house. B'mispar shemot, take your head count, kol zachar, every male, l'gilgalosam, according to number of their names. L'gulgalosam, according to their head count. It literally means a skull, their head. But Menachem Azariah Mifano, known as the Rama Mipano, but I just saw a post recently online that it's not Pano, but it actually is a place in Italy where he lived in the 16th century called Fano. I bless all of us if we want to go there on vacation with people that matter to us, we should be able to do such a thing. And write a really awesome email to our family about how great it was. But the Rama Mifano explains in his Asar Ma'amaros, in his famous collection of 10 essays, 10 teachings, he wrote in the 16th century, that when Moshe Rabbeinu looked at every Jew to implant in the consciousness of Klal Yisrael, in the congregation of Israel, that in order to create a community that's supportive, that in order to create a community that's going to fulfill its purpose, everyone has to know individually that we matter. Moshe Rabbeinu looked at every single Jew and with his Ruach HaKodesh saw Gilgul Osam, the Gilgul, the reincarnation of every individual. That all of history that came before and all of history that's going to come afterwards and the transmigration of that soul kind of flowing throughout history from the beginning of time until the fulfillment of creation and the coming of Mashiach, Moshe Rabbeinu caught a glimpse into every single year, into the infinite nature of every Jew, that every single Jew, every single one of us is not just here and now, but we contain multitudes of souls that came before us. We have a background, we have a history, we come from somewhere. We're a chip off of a block of incredible history. And God willing, there's also continuity that comes from us. Either in the form of physical progeny, or in our deeds, our thoughts, our actions, how we affect the world, how we impact the world around us. That's called our progeny. And Moshe Rabbeinu, in counting every Jew, l'gilgul osam, a head count, literally means that Moshe Rabbeinu caught a glimpse into all the Gilgulim of how we had been reincarnated and how we will return to this world and continue in this world. Because death, in physical terms, does not end the relationship. It changes the way that relationship is, but it doesn't end it. The life force of an individual remains in the world, in their family, in their friends, in their accomplishments, in their achievements, in their emails, in their pictures and in their writings, and in the kindness and the impact that they had on others. And we know that Moshe Rabbeinu, as a young man growing up in Mitzrayim, when he was faced with that incredible moment of choice, when he saw that Jews were being persecuted, and he identified with the suffering of his fellow Jew, and turned his back on his Egyptian upbringing. Pasuk says, Vayifen ko v'cho. He looked this way and that way, Vayar ki ein ish, and he saw that there was no man. The basic pshat means that he saw that there was no one coming. He was able to strike down this Egyptian. But Rashi tells us, that Moshe Rabbeinu looked, so to speak, into the future of what was going to come from this individual who was committing that crime, that anti-Semitic violent crime, to see what was going to come. Was there going to be any point in history where there was going to be a tikkun, a rectification, where there was going to be some good, and he saw no. Vayar ki ein ish, he saw that there was nothing that was going to come here. Vayach at the Mitzri, and he was able to, and he struck him down. Moshe Rabbeinu had a little bit of a glimpse behind the curtain to see the bigger picture. Perhaps that's why Moshe Rabbeinu was called Anav Mikol Adam, the most humble of men. He understood that there was just a bigger picture. I said it was funny talking about this a little bit. You know, I feel self-conscious standing up here in front of a group of people, a lot of people that I know and love, also some people I haven't met yet. It's like almost a little presumptuous and funny to be talking about Nistaros, talking about things that are way out of my playing field, they're way off my, out of my comfort zone. But I don't know, you probably, like Dr. Theo didn't feel self-conscious. He put things out on the table. He writes these emails and he's quoting from Chaim Vital and he's quoting from the Bedichever and he's writing Torahs from the Or Chaim HaKadosh very comfortably. So I think I feel like with that, with his wind in the sails, I feel like yalla. The Shabbos, we were learning Parsha Shlach. Klal Yisrael read Parsha Shlach. Zohar HaKadosh traces the origins of these spies, the origin story, so to speak, of the Meraglim. Take a step or two back. Doesn't begin here in the Midbar in the wilderness in our Parsha, but begins generations earlier. When Yosef in Mitzrayim identifies the 10 brothers who don't recognize him, and he says, Vayomer aleihem, Meraglim atem. You're Meraglim. And the Zohar Kodesh writes that at that moment, Yosef, generations earlier, was given a glimpse that the narrative, the story, the experience of what he was going through with his 10 brothers approaching him, approaching the tzaddik, foreshadows the 10 spies that would come to Eretz Israel and not recognize the opportunity, the Kedusha, and the Chibur, the connection that had to happen at that moment. Vayomer aleihem meraglim atem. That experience of those 10 spies missing the opportunity to identify, to recognize, to draw close, and to connect leads to Churban. There was a Kalev. And there was Yoshua. Kalev, the Pasuk tells us, Avdi Kalev, Ruach Acheret Bo. There's Ruach Acheret. And the Zohar explains that Ruach Acheret represents a soul, a spirit that was in him that was different than the other spies. He wasn't part of that chait. Because Kalev ben Yefuna, the Zohar HaKadosh tells us, was a reincarnation, a Gilgal of Eliezer, Eved Avram. Eliezer, Eved Avram, continued in this world in the form of Kalev ben Yefuna. So when Kalev ben Yefuna goes to Davin by Kivrei Avos to Hebron to get that Eitz Amuka, the story continues of Eliezer going to Avram Avinu by Kalev going to that place to Davin. Because there was a Ruach Acheret, there was a different spirit. In the world of Sod, a completely other story is being told. Yoshua ben Nun, we're told, comes from Shevet Ephraim. Shevet Ephraim comes from Yosef. He's not part of that narrative of Yosef turning to those 10 brothers and saying, Meraglim atem. And Yosef was trying to implant in them the possibility of tikkun, of rectification. But they fell short of that. Again, we're learning Torah, we're reading Torah. And we're strolling through this orchard of Pardes with a sense of humility that we just don't know the entirety of the story. Later in our parsha, we read about the Mekoshesh Eitzim, the wood gatherer. Okay, can we do a noise-o-meter crowd poll? Yeah? Mekoshesh Eitzim, the guy who gathered wood on Shabbos. Good or not good? Less desirable. Less filling? Takes away. Good? Let's see the hands. We see good? There's a good guy? Broke Shabbos? stoned to death? There's like three psukim at the end of the parsha. Is anybody here? About Yudin. So the problem is now. Otherwise, what is ever going to do now? I should have said it the other way first. Let's, can we wheel that back? If Dr. Thaler were here, he'd be sitting there nodding like this. It's okay. In fact, one time I was in Fairlawn and I was telling a story and I got sidetracked and I got flurried and he just looked at me and smiled like, okay, do your thing. I'll be pshat. Okay, pretend Rabbi Yudin's not here for a second. So have a beginner's mind, everybody. Breaking Shabbos, collecting wood, stoned to death. Ideal son-in-law? This is a guy we want? Someone coming home? No. For sure not. In fact, if we were doing top parsha or top Torah Shabbos afternoon, probably would not be one of the heroes in the story. It's pretty straightforward. I'll never forget. It was right after my year in Israel, right after high school. I was in Yerushalayim in the Old City, enjoying Shal Shudis at the home of Reb David Hertzberg, all of a shalom, a student of Reb Shlomo Kalbach, and it was this week's parsha Shlach. And I remember he was talking about the Halakha Mekoshesh Eitzim. I'm like, okay. There's a reputation of this chevra, and maybe it's true. Like these guys, maybe they're lit up. Maybe they're just like everything is a joke, and everything's halig, and everything's beautiful, and everything's groovy, and it's just like this hippie kind of everything's fine. He's saying the halig of mekoshesh etzim, the holy gatherer of wood. I'm like, okay. At the time, I was like, coming into myself a little bit. I was starting to learn a little bit. Understand this down the kaf schut, you can judge favorably, but I mean, guy was mechal Shabbos in public, and he was stoned to death. And he explained as follows. Zohar HaKadosh says that after the Chet HaMeraglim in our Parsha, when Klal Yisrael was stuck in Chutz La'aretz, we were in the Midbar, there was a little bit of a sense that perhaps, the Torah which was intended to be received and actualized in the land of Israel might not apply. It could be that it just doesn't apply. Because there was a swing and a miss. We went the wrong way. And maybe the whole trajectory changes. And maybe, Torah just isn't something that we have to live by, or that it's really going to have the same repercussions or the same weight. Nehelege Mekoshesh Eitzim was Moser Nefesh, sacrificed himself by being Mechalel Shabbos, Bifar Hesia, in order to prove Moshe Emes v'Torasa Emes. The laws of Shabbos apply, even outside of Eretz Yisrael, in non-ideal circumstances, after Hachet. Even though we made a mistake, and even though we're paying for that, we have a fresh start, and we still are Chayiv in Shabbos. And he was stoned to death, Al Kiddush Hashem. And there are certain Sadikim, from Radzin and Ishbitz, who would refer to him as the Halakha Mekoshesh Eitzim. And traced the narrative back to the origin story of Jewish self-sacrifice when Avram Avinu took Yitzchak to the Akedah. Vayash came Avram Baboker. Avram got up early in the morning. He gathered his son and his belongings. Vayivaka atzei ola. And he split the wood for the Korban Ola. Zohar HaKadosh says Avram Avinu was preparing those pieces of wood for the Mekoshesh, for the gatherer, in the days of the Midbar, to collect, to defend the honor of God, and prove the veracity of Torah. Korach, who we consider to be a Rasha, a failure, power hungry, driven by ego. This coming week's parasha, consider that our entire communal construct of gathering together a minion of 10 people, our entire construct of Hashra'as HaShechinah, of divine presence indwelling, which we learn from the Gemara in Brachos, Dvarim Shebekedusha, 10 Jewish men together, V'nikdashti B'soch B'nei Yisrael, I will be sanctified within the congregation of 10 men. The Gemara learns as a Gzeir Shavah, as a juxtaposition from verses from the two parashios that we're in the middle of. A Gzeir Shavah of Toch and Toch. He badlu mitoch ha'eda hazos, achlo sam karaga. Korach was a guy who was rabble-rousing, and his crew rebelled against Moshe. and the warning came out, hibadlu, disassociate yourself, mitoch ha'ida, from within this congregation. And he's back up, watch out, it was a warning shot. The Gemara tells us that there's a juxtaposition between the toch, from within this congregation, what is called a congregation, what's considered a congregation, what we learn in this week's parsha, and what we learned yesterday in Parshat Shlach. Masaya Eida Hara Hazos Ha'eda. This group of 10 spies. Vayavo B'nai Yisrael. And this is what the Pasuk means. In Shlach we learn that an Eida is 10 spies. And we're told to disassociate ourselves from that group. And the Gemara learns out the Chiv of Minyan and Kedusha and Kaddish from these two groups of failures, of wrongdoers, of spies, and of rebels in Korach. What's fascinating is that the Gemara Yishalmi finds a different proof text, just parenthetically. The Talmud Bavli in Brachos, we learn out the gathering of minyan from the group of spies and the group of rebels. But in the Yishalmi, they learn out the notion of Nikdashti B'toch B'nei Yisrael, of sanctifying within a group, meaning 10 men, from the brothers approaching Yosef. Vayavo B'nei Yisrael Ishbor B'soch Haboim. They came from among the people who were gathering, right? The Yerushalmi learns out from those brothers. In other words, there's something going on beneath the surface where we're drawing out opportunities for Kedusha and holiness and connection from within a place that seems to be blatantly wrong, blatantly evil. But we don't know the full story. That's the world that Dr. Thaler was drawn toward. Toward probing beneath the surface to find that which is good, to find that which is right, to find that which is potentially holy, to bring about tikkun, rectification, take a little bit of a bigger picture and get a bigger view of what the actual story taking place is. Korach, the Ari HaKadosh tells us, Asofei Tevos, Tzadik Katamar Yifrach. There was a spark of holiness in his intention, even if it got muddled up in ego and arrogance. Now, the Meraglim themselves, I mean, the Rishonim go back and forth trying to contextualize that whole experience in the Midbar. Multiple motivations, positive motivations, positive intentions. They were wrong, but they weren't completely evil. It's clear from the Gemara that the Ribono Shel Olam and Chazal are twisting themselves around in circles, trying to figure out a way that from within a place of rebellion and failure, from the world of Korach and the world of the Meraglim, for us to recognize life is complex. That the world of mitzvahs and averos, of failure and success, a part of a bigger picture, to draw our attention to what's going on beneath the surface. There's a source on the page from Rav Moshe Wolfson, on the other side of the page. Rav Wolfson explains so beautifully about this generation, the days of Korach. I'll just say it outside. When Korach approaches, the Pasuk tells us that Korach and his men kind of came to Moshe Rabbeinu, Vayikach Korach. So the Targum says, Vayikach Korach, this Palak, that he was coming to, like, you know, create dissent, which is a remez, which is a hint, an illusion. It palag, plag, to make a division. It's a remez to the Dor HaFlaga, that generation which had failed so miserably and had an opportunity. Now the members of the Dor HaFlaga returned as the souls of the Anshei Sdom, who also weren't able to fulfill their potential and find tikkun and find rectification. And now have another chance generations later in history. Now, Ein Lano Esef Benistaros. This is not my wheelhouse or our comfort zone of making these calls and understanding who is a Gilgul of what and what soul is being reincarnated where and who's fixing what. But what is clear is what the Mishnah in Avos tells us at the bottom of the first page. Ben Azai used to say, "Al tihivaz l'chol adam, don't be disrespectful of anyone. Va'al tihimaflig l'chol davar, and don't be dismissive of anything. She'in l'cha adam, she'in lo shah, because there is no man that has not his hour. Va'in l'cha davar, she'in lo makom, and there's no thing that doesn't have his place. We don't know." Not knowing a higher level of consciousness, thinking that we've got it all figured out. Her? I know her growing up. I know her parents and her family. Yeah, okay. Him? Okay, same thing as always. Whatever. With the approach of Ben Azai, a little bit of a recognition that there is an entirety going on beneath the surface, below and above us. And then we have just one small snapshot of a certain time and place, of a person in a specific moment. With a little bit of humility, we could. How could we be dismissive of someone? How could we be dismissive of something? And we might not know to learn this specific chapter in Hilchos Brachos from the Rambam in this specific place in the forest, and to take a drink from this brook that's concealed by a bunch of leaves outside Lvov is going to make some tikkun for the 6 days of creation. But we can tread carefully. But we can journey gently in the world with sensitivity, with kindness. That's really the way that I knew Dr. Thaler. It's really the way that I believe that we can honor Dr. Thaler. There's a Gemara, a painful Gemara in Gittin, involving the son and daughter of Rabbi Shmuel ben Elisha. It figures prominently on Tisha B'Av. Hopefully this will be Jewish history this year, and we'll be celebrating on Tisha B'Av. But describes the beautiful daughter and handsome son of the Kohen Rabbi Shmuel ben Elisha were taken into captivity. They were sold to two different masters. And these two Gentile masters met, each one raving about the beauty of the slave that they had acquired following the Churban Beis HaMikdash, the exile of the Jewish people, and they decided, ooh, let's breed them. Let's get them together. They're our property. And in a degrading vision, so we'll bring them together. We'll make them breed, and they'll have beautiful children, and we'll have more slaves. It'll be a good investment. And they brought these two slaves together, who unbeknownst to them, or to the slaves themselves, to the son and daughter of Rabbi Shmuel ben Elisha, that they were siblings. They brought them together in a dark room at night, and they locked the door and said, you know, get together, and in one of the horrific visions of the result of the Churban. And while in that room, on opposite sides of the room, they sat on the ground weeping. And the son of Rabbi Shmuel ben Elisha cried out, I'm the son of the Kohen, I'm a priest. This is what my end is going to be. This is what I should do. There's no way. I won't do it. And the daughter of the Kohen was on the other side of the room, and she said, I'm a Bas Yisrael, I'm the daughter of, I'm the daughter, this is how I should degrade myself? And they sat on either ends of the room, in their separate corners, and cried the whole night. They begged God for mercy. The Gemara describes that the morning came, they recognized each other, they fell into each other's arms, and cried until their souls left them. And Yirmiyahu HaNavi, the Gemara says, refers to this when he said, Eini, Eini, Yardamai, that my eyes cried tears over these two children. The Ramami Fano asks, how could such a tragedy befall the children of Rabbi Shmuel Kohen Gadol? How could it be? Meaning, take a step back. We have this question on any tragedy, on anything, on any horrific event in Jewish history, and there's no shortage, and it should be it. But how could these things take place? It doesn't make any sense. It's like Tevye would say, you know, dear God, you know, can't you choose someone else once in a while? You know, like for some of this, the suffering, these terror attacks and crusades and inquisitions, all of that, in the diverse self. In the face of tragedy, there's the uncomprehensible. So this 16th century Talmud Chacham, Mordechai Zahar asks, how could it be that for the children of the Kohen, before such a horrific end, he suggests, from the world of Sod, drawing from the world of Sod, to try to help us comprehend the incomprehensible, to help us a little bit, like, just know that we don't see the entirety of the story, suggests that these were Gilgulim of Amnon and Tamar, and that the son and daughter of Rabbi Shmuel ben Elisha were the Gilgulim of the two children that were fathered by David HaMelech, Amnon and Tamar, who were not halachic siblings exactly, and Amnon lost it inappropriately after Tamar and wasn't able to overcome his Yetzer Hara and a very horrific and unpleasant and tragic event took place between them. And he wasn't able to be Mekadesh Shem Shemayim. He wasn't able to do the right thing. Allowed his lower self to get the best of him and committed a crime of sexual violence against Tamar. And the Rambam Mifano suggests that perhaps the children of Rabbi Shmuel ben Elisha were in the world to rectify, to complete. Those two souls returned in the form of these children to make the right choice, to find solace and consolation, fixing, healing for those souls. We don't know. But what we do know, and what is clear and what is certain, is that we can't be disrespectful of anyone or be dismissive of anything. And that such a perspective, whether or not it's our intellectual comfort zone or our religious wheelhouse, whether or not this is an area which we're going to delve into, or this is something which we choose from our rational perspective to live with, to know that there's such a notion. And in Jewish consciousness, there's such a thing as that which we don't understand. And not to be disrespectful of anyone, even or especially those who are flawed, and those who fail, and those who rebel, and those who fall short. Meraglim, spies, rebels of Korach, Amnon and Tamar, to have humility, to know that in this journey through life of trying to make sense of our existence, we don't have the full story. But there's a meta-narrative that's taking place in this orchard of this world, and it's for us to just sometimes just know that we don't know. And we find ourselves in different places in the forest, maybe the Baal Shem Tov sent us there or not, but to just be respectful and to just be humble. The Ora Meir of Zhytomyr, who was a student of the Maggid of Mizrich, delves into this. And he says that sometimes we find ourselves somewhere in business, on a business trip. We find ourselves somehow involved or engaged in something in the community. Our parnasa brings us somewhere. Our car breaks down somewhere and we interact with someone. We meet someone on the side of the road. We pass somebody on the way to our office or on the way to the bakery. We hold the door for someone at a rest stop on the throughway. Or we greet someone on the way out of the supermarket on a Friday afternoon. To be aware of the fact that that individual is coming into my life and I'm coming into their life, not by chance, but that there's a divine design. I need to be at that place with that person in that moment. I don't necessarily know what to do. I don't necessarily have the WhatsApp message from the Baal Shem Tov HaKadosh. But as the Ora Meir says, from his Rebbe the Maggid, who received it from his Rebbe the Baal Shem Tov, to approach it with humility, and to do our best, and to give the benefit of the doubt to the individual or the place, or the set of variables that we're interacting with, and to assume that they too are doing their best, and to be forgiving, and to be easy, and to be flexible, and to be humble. Because without them, our life is not complete. That's what the Or HaMeir says. That's what the Tzaddik from Zhitomer says. Without that person, place, or thing that we're interacting with, the story is not complete. How do we know? Because they're part of our story. We're all jigsaw pieces completing this big puzzle called life. We're all different threads that are kind of interwoven together to create a beautiful tapestry. We don't necessarily know which color or place in the picture we are at any given moment, but to approach with humility. That's Dr. Thaler's legacy. And that's perhaps why he was drawn to the world of Sod. Because it's so clear that what we see on the outside and the people that we interact with, and the difficult people that we interact with, and the people who are sometimes hard to get along with, the people who are struggling to find their place in the world, to take a step back and see the bigger picture, to know that we don't know, and to relate to them with compassion and sensitivity and humility. The world of Sod, we might think, means that we have to probe the heavens to try to figure out the divine plan. But in a beautiful collection of teachings from the Lubavitcher Rebbe called Yom Yom, Lubavitcher Rebbe brings a story from the Tzemach Tzedek, who shared an incident about his life. He was on his way to shul, and someone interrupted him, stopped him on the way. He was going to daven with talis and tefillin and be a part of a minyan. And on the way, someone interrupted him and asked him for a loan. It was market day. He wanted to buy something, and he interrupted him for a loan. But he was on his way to shul. He was on his way to do something that would affect the upper worlds. But when the Rebbe realized that this poor fellow needed the loan now, at that minute, he stopped. He went home, got a few kopecks, gave it to him, and continued on his way. The Alter Rebbe, his grandfather, appeared to him in a vision, in a dream, beaming, praising him for his thoughtfulness. The Rebbe writes in the second paragraph there, based on this incident, one should really know the route to the heavenly chambers. It says it in Yiddish on the right side. I don't know, Jack, there are people here who can help us with this. One should really know the route to the heavenly chambers, and sometimes we assume that means doing the formal, vertical interactions with the divine. But actually, it's not crucial. You only need the main thing to help another wholeheartedly, helfen belev of shalem, to help another wholeheartedly, mitig a feel with sensitivity, haben a geschmack to take pleasure in yidden tanatova, to do a favor, to do good by another. With sensitivity and with feeling, to do kindness for another is far more important than probing the secrets of the upper world. To live in the world of Sod, to live in the world that Dr. Thaler modeled for all of us, is to live in a world of humility, to be kind, to connect with people, with places, to be respectful of everyone and everything with humility. Perhaps that's why he was able to help so many on their journey in the world, as a therapist, as a friend, as a family member, as a parent. As someone who was consistently drawn to the world of Sod, he understood that there was always more to the picture. L'ilui nishmato, for his memory, and in his honor, and for all of our well-being, let's learn from him to always know that there's something beneath the surface, that there's more to the story. And wherever we find ourselves in this transmigration, reincarnation, we don't know, it doesn't really matter. But to be where we are and to be respectful, with humility, with kindness, to help another with sensitivity, belev of shalem, mindikafil. And Mirtz Hashem will be able to do justice to his memory, to do honor, and together with his family, to continue on this journey through life with great humility and joy.